Our reading this morning is from On Abundance by the Reverend Deanna Van Diver. We are people of abundance. We know struggle in abundance and strength in abundance. For every story we know about not enough, we know an answering story of lots. Not enough time, lots of meaningful work to do. Not enough money, lots of sustaining relationships. Since the flood of 2005 in New Orleans, I have an abundance of friendships that grew out of people coming here to stand in solidarity with and bear witness to our struggle. Now these beloveds are woven into the fabric of my life, and I walk with them through the joys and struggles of their lives. Adoptions, divorces, cancer, new vocations, the death of parents, the building of tree houses. They are now part of my life, and my life is more abundant. Abundance is not inherently good or bad. It simply is. We celebrate when joy is abundant, and we mourn when grief is abundant. When it is time to sit down and write, I sometimes have an abundance of reasons to keep getting up and doing something else. When it is time to sit down and write, I sometimes have an abundance of words pouring from my fingertips. Though our dominant culture is framed by a scarcity narrative, I offer this truth of abundance. When we see that our days are replete with abundance, we are less afraid. When we are less afraid, we connect more. The more connections we see in our lives, the more abundance we notice. Sometimes the abundance will wear us out. Sometimes it will fill us up. Life lived from the narrative of abundance is not easy. It is, however, a more loving way, a more loving through the world than a life lived in scarcity. Come. Choose to err on the side of love and generosity. We are a people of abundance. I just love the story about the baker and his wife giving bread each week to God, and how the poor man each week received bread from God. The giving is such a generous and holy act. It becomes more holy when the bread is actually given from the man directly to the poor, from the baker to the poor man, because it is just from one person to another. And sometimes this kind of giving doesn't feel holy. It doesn't feel that way. But in fact, it is holy because it makes the world more whole, which is the definition of holy. And it often feels like that to me, stories of generosity. A little girl pesters her mother for a candy bar in the grocery store line, and after she finally wheedles it out of her mother, she gives it to the little boy in line behind her, who is crying. "Why?" her mother asks, completely perplexed. "Well, I heard his mother say that there would be no more candy bars until she got another job." And there's another story of a night janitor at a university who each year would save from his meager salary enough money to give a large award to the student who burned the midnight oil the most. And then he would give a lavish dinner for 12 people who were the runners-up for that award. A friend told me that she discovered after helping another friend with her taxes that this friend gave 30% of her income away to organizations that help people less fortunate. And it certainly brought into context the kind of frugal quirkiness of this particular friend. And I feel that holiness when I give. Without thought, without concern that I might not have enough money or time or energy, there's a freedom, an abandon to just give of what I am, of what I have. And I can feel that connection between myself and someone else and between myself and what I believe is greater than myself. And in that moment, I have a sense of freedom from everything in me that says, no, no, no. And I feel like I'm saying yes, yes, yes to life. It's stewardship season, this time at Wolf, if you didn't gather that this morning. And this is a time when we are each asked to pledge a particular amount that we will give to Wolf in the following year. And today is the day that we begin that stewardship campaign. And one of the things that traditionally happens in UU congregations at this time of year is the minister gives a sermon that is jokingly titled, The Sermon on the Amount. The traditional form is that the minister tells the congregations all the marvelous things that the congregation is doing and wants to do and what that is going to cost, and ask everybody to look into their hearts and checkbooks and find a way to make all of that happen. And I would like to say that you had an excellent example of the Sermon on the Amount this morning by Tracy Love Silver. I thought she did an outstanding job. I actually seem to be terrible at giving this sermon. It's not the subject matter at all, believe me, at all. Wolf is truly doing marvelous things. In fact, I feel like Wolf is absolutely on fire right now, living its mission. And I feel awed by it. I feel awed by all of you. I feel, actually, rather often that the congregation is just burning this path and I am running as hard as I possibly can to catch up. And it's usually a pretty futile task. I'm CC'd on all these emails of people doing great things, and it is going so fast, I don't even have time to read all those emails. And so while I feel completely out of breath, I also feel totally energized. You are casting seeds of inspiration. Worship is rich and varied and nearly full every Sunday. Monthly, our remarkable, large, and growing choir just sparks our spirit with music. I think you can agree. In our service, and then later in RE, our children and youth are learning how to live lives as you use. Before services, people are study humanism and Buddhism and spirit of life in order to live richer lives. This year, our Buddhist group split and started offering a Wednesday night group, and what happened was the group nearly expanded, doubled in size. After services, we often gather to learn more how to make a difference in our communities. And each and every week, we are growing in compassionate community. Over a third of the congregation is meeting in chalice circles, where people are learning how to listen and be heard, who are sharing deeply of themselves so we can open and learn more about our own selves and grow in compassion towards others. We have many small groups in this congregation where people are learning, being together, getting to know each other, and growing in compassion. Groups such as Eldertopia and the Women's Group and a book group. This fall, we had an auction where the number one goal was to build community. And it raised a lot of money as well as doing just that. People gathered, diverse people, and joyfully outbid each other to raise money for this congregation. And Wolf is blooming in service to the wider world. Just this last Thursday, that morning when schools were starting late, when some weren't starting at all, when there was a skiff of snow on the ground, but Portlanders were staying firmly off the street, Wolf sponsored the Interfaith Movement for Immigrant Justice Vigil at the ICE building in Southwest Portland. 20 people showed up that morning, and 13 of them were from Wolf. Wolf members have sent letters to those imprisoned unjustly. We have called and written elected officials and attended vigils and rallies for environmental justice. We have done the same thing for the rights of immigrants. We have been resolutely learning about racism and white supremacist culture. We have filled backpacks of food for hungry school children and their families. We have given gifts and school supplies to farm worker children. We are right now collecting socks for LGBTQ youth and homeless LGBTQ youth, and managed to get a box full of socks to them before the snow and cold started earlier this week. We offer very affordable meeting space to groups who save and change lives. This includes several 12-step programs, meditation groups, men groups, and a community choir. And we are here. Tracy so clearly underlined that this morning. And this is one of our great services to the world, that we are simply here. We are here when our community needs a religious, liberal religious voice. We are here when people's lives fall apart and need people to hold them, nurturing and in care. We are here when someone moves here from another part of the world and needs a Unitarian Universalist congregation. So the subject matter clearly is not why I'm not good at giving the sermon on the amount. I believe passionately in Wolf's mission, its passion, and all the ways that this congregation wants to grow and expand its ministry within its walls and outside of them. I am, in fact, one of those crazy true believers when it comes to Wolf. Did you know that in the late 60s, early 70s, this congregation started a preschool for poor children? In this neighborhood, there was a lot of poor families, and so the congregation decided to start a preschool just down the hall here where our RE classes meet. They knocked on people's doors and asked them if they needed a place for their children, and with the resources of the congregation, they started this preschool. And after several years of doing it themselves, they got Head Start funding and started a Head Start program. And I truly believe that a congregation that can do that can do absolutely anything. So, the reason why I'm not good at giving the sermon on the amount has nothing to do with the content of the sermon. Instead, it is my belief in love, in love's transformational power. It is my belief in the holy and our capacity to make things whole. I believe in the work of religious communities is to help people transform so they can experience the abundance of love and goodness in the world and then bless the world back. And I believe that generosity is an essential practice that allows this transformation. I find that when I attempt to define the words love and generosity, they seem so close in meaning that it sometimes feels difficult to know which is which. Love, not that feeling we have for specific people, but religious love, means a commitment to right relationship and the well-being of others and ourselves. Love is compassion, as well as our response to that compassion. When we become loving people, we respond to others and systems with our hearts and with our understanding that we are all connected and our desire for deeper, more meaningful relationships. When we become loving people, we seek and create wholeness. Generosity means the giving of ourselves. The purpose of generous giving is simply giving because we can. It means giving our life energy to in all sorts of forms. Money, time, emotion, and spirit. Love is a commitment and a response. That response is giving what we are able to give. When we have feelings of love towards someone, like our parents or children or grandchildren or our friends or our family, we freely give of our life energy without thought or consideration. This is our expression of love. My life energy is your life energy. I am generous because I love you. We make connections. We create wholeness. When love is a commitment to right relationship, compassion, or justice, the response is still the same, a giving of ourselves. My life energy is your life energy. I give to you because I love you. We make connections. We create wholeness. Love and generosity are interwound. They require one another. As simple as that seems, though, being both loving and generous are often not all that easy. There's this Buddhist tale about a wise woman who was wandering through the woods and in a stream found a very precious stone. She put it in her bag, and later she met another traveler who was very hungry, so she opened her bag to offer him food. And he saw that precious stone in the bag, and he asked her for it, and she gave it to him without hesitation or thought. He went away so thrilled with his good luck. This precious stone was enough to give him security for the rest of his life. A few days later, though, he returned to the old woman, the wise woman, and he said, "I will return the stone for you. To you, because I think you have something so much more precious to give me. I want to know what it was in your heart that made it possible for you to give me this stone." And I think that is why I am not good at the sermon on the amount. I want to know the answer to that question. How did that woman have the generosity of spirit to give that precious stone that could have provided her security for all of her life to a stranger? My question is, how do we grow in the capacity for generosity? How do we become more loving people? In the United States, we typically believe that Buddhism teaches that meditation is the first step towards enlightenment. This isn't actually true, however. Buddha taught that generosity and morality were the first conditions required for spiritual enlightenment. Meditation came later. Susan Salzberg, a longtime meditation teacher and student of Buddhism, writes, "The Buddha said that a true spiritual life is not possible without a generous heart. The path begins there because of the joy that arises from a generous heart. Pure enlightenment, pure unhindered delight flows freely when we practice generosity. We experience joy in forming the intention to give, in the actual act of giving, and in recollecting the fact that we've given." Interestingly, this ancient idea that generosity brings joy has been affirmed not only by thousands of practitioners over hundreds of years, but by the scientific method. Studies consistently show that people who are generous are happier and healthier, rather significantly happier and healthier than others. They also show through brain scans and self-reporting that we do experience joy at each of the stages of giving, just as the Buddha said, when we plan to give, when we give, and when we remember our giving. Salzberg says, "Buddhism teaches that giving grows our self-confidence, self-esteem, self-respect, and well-being. Through giving, we experience our capacity to be present in and affected by the world. We develop confidence in our capacity to do good and create wholeness. We respect ourselves for who we are. When we give, we experience, I can. We experience yes to life. It is the pride and joy of the baker and his wife who gave 12 loaves of bread each week to God. Love and generosity can be incredibly challenging in practice, however. We live in a culture that teaches the basic truth about the universe is scarcity. Our entire economic model is based on the idea that we live in a world of scarce resources and is organized accordingly, and organizes our thinking accordingly. We can easily experience how much there is not enough. We don't have enough time, or energy, or emotional energy, or attention, or money. And when I feel there's not enough, I feel fear. Just like the person in this morning's reading spoke about. And when I feel fear, I want to hoard. I want to keep my precious time for myself and my family. I get intense about my budget. I suddenly find that line in the budget marked generosity and giving suddenly needs to just go somewhere else that's a little more practical and makes me feel a little more safe. And I carefully monitor how much energy I have and how I share my talents. I don't want to squander them. These acts really make me feel safe and careful about my resources. I feel smart about ensuring that I don't burn out or have a financial crisis. But I also feel tight and enclosed, like I am checking off my resources in a box and carefully monitoring them. It is safe, but it's not particularly joyful. It is not living fully. It feels like saying no, 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 instead of yes, yes, yes. The issue, according to the Buddhists and others, is perception. So many of us live in a place of not enough. And sometimes there isn't enough money or time or energy, and we extend ourselves too much and we burn out. This is real. But abundance is also real. We see it in the remarkableness, the lavishness of life itself. A lilac bush in bloom is enough evidence of the abundance in the world, but all of life is extravagant in that way. We also experience abundance in communities and in care and love. We know it in the exuberance of children and in the feelings of joy. We feel it when creativity unleashes in ourselves and others. The experience of abundance is to relax into life and allow it to give us the nourishment that we need. Then generosity comes more easily. Our generosity creates more abundance than for others. But you have to experience abundance to believe it. You can't really think your way into it, which is kind of a problem for Unitarian Universalists. Interestingly, the teachings of faith traditions and science tell us the one way we can really actually experience abundance is to practice generosity. Salzburg says the practice of generosity is about creating space. We see our limits and we extend them continuously, which creates an expansiveness and spaciousness that's deeply composed. Generosity can help us open and experience I can and yes to life instead of a closed and careful accounting of what we have and what we need and what's possible. Being generous is simply a form of letting go and being in the abundance of life. Still, as I've said before, practicing generosity isn't that easy for many of us. We are Americans, after all. And many, like me, need a lot of reminders. We need opportunities. That, I believe, is one of the purposes of congregations. The Reverend Burton Carley, who served the UU Church of the River in Memphis, Tennessee, writes that the purpose of our church is not to give you, as some churches promise, the formula or secret to receive the generosity you believe you deserve from on high, but to create generous lives. The adventure of faith for us is not to have a strategic plan for obtaining blessings, but how to live a life that blesses others. Or in other words, to transform into a more loving people. In congregations, one of the reasons we gather in congregations is because they give us ample ways to practice generosity with our money, with our time, with our talent, with our energy, and with our creativity. We take the offering in our service not as a way to pass the hat to pay the bills, but as an opportunity to practice generosity each and every week. Every week, we have a chance to be wild with generosity. We offer similar opportunities to be generous by volunteering our time to the congregation, just welcoming people, or listening to someone, or serving in our wider community. Being generous once or twice is nice, but for that feeling of the abundant, loving life, practice is what we need day in, day out, week in, week out, and how to be generous people. A congregation is a place that gives us ample opportunities, not only because there is work to do and we need money to make this organization run, because learning generosity is essential to being the people we most want to be. And stewardship season is just another opportunity to practice generosity. Yes, this time of year, we consider the importance of Wolf in our own lives, and perhaps most importantly, a time to consider how Wolf might be, how giving to Wolf might be a gift to others that we can give to them, because Wolf matters to so many people. But there is more to this season, and that is why I always fail at the Sermon on the Mount. Because I believe the stewardship season is about love and how it transforms us and how we become the people that we most want to be. This season can remind us to practice generosity every day, not only with money, but with our time and with our energy, with our creativity and kindness and goodwill, and with our smiles and laughter. This is a season, this month of the stewardship drive, that we can just relax. We can attempt to relax into abundance and step beyond our limits, to push them open, to create spaciousness, and say, yes, 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 it is time for holiness. It is a time to make things whole.
Thank you, Reverend Tracy.